Well, so one thing I might recommend, and this is gonna be a bad word, so get your censor buttons ready. But you could look to fourth edition. Because
Beep. Well met, adventurers. My name is Lee.
I'm Joe, and welcome to Mage Productions.
Welcome back, Derek Nekritz. Thank you for joining us again. How are you doing tonight?
Absolutely. We really enjoyed our last conversation, so we really wanted to have you back on and talk about some other cool stuff.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, the last time was awesome, and it was an amazing time.
And it wasn't like 10 minutes ago.
Not at all.
Not at all.
It wasn't. It wasn't. There wasn't this weird stretch of time where we couldn't figure out what we were actually doing.
The internet sneezed, remember?
Oh, that's right. I'm not the only one with a sniffle.
I feel like there should be a medication for that somewhere.
There should, yeah. I think it's a cream.
Just rub it in.
Just smear this cream onto your modem. It'll be fine.
Hold on, let me go rub my mouth, my modem. I'll be right back, guys. Oh, cringe. Okay, so a fantastic game just came out called Kingdom Hearts 3. We have all been waiting a very long time for this to come out. And I don't know about you guys, but I want to keep playing even when I'm not actually playing.
Yeah, I had that feeling so bad the entirety of all last week. I was sitting there at work going, oh my god, I could be playing Kingdom Hearts. Am I sick? I feel sick. No, you're not sick. Don't do this. Don't be like this. It's an amazing game.
No, I can't use all the time off right now. I have to wait.
It's an amazing game, and weirdly enough, very well worth the wait, I think.
I think it was too. You know, all right. So this is a podcast about tabletop games and things like that. But I've read a lot of reviews about this game that are like, it's trash. I'm like, you know what? No, it's really not. It's really not. It's good. They're wrong.
Yeah. See, you're a lot nicer than me because I was going to be like, you know what? They're trash. But like, I'm kind of chaotic neutral here. So it's kind of my MO to be like a little bit of a jerk.
Yeah. Well, apparently, according to something that I just saw on Twitter, I am chaotic good because of cold pizza and orange soda.
At the same time, or
I don't know what it means.
Okay, sure, we'll yeah, roll with it.
That's me.
Okay,
so that has nothing to do with anything. But how can we bring the concept of Kingdom Hearts into D&D? That's what we're here to talk about today.
That is a tricky question, unless you're me and have been thinking about it for the last 8 hours.
Also same.
So most importantly, I think if you wanted to have a game like Kingdom Hearts, and the funny thing is that the jokes actually point you in the right direction. You know, everybody's like, aha, yeah, darkness. But they're right, because the alignment system is super important in Kingdom Hearts.
For real. Well, and I feel like within Kingdom Hearts, like, or from game to game, sure, but even from like segment to segment, like you are jumping some things, as well as really playing into, like, from a looking at a chaotic neutral standpoint, like you're really going from neutral to chaotic, but staying within those bounds. And I mean, these characters, they, yeah, focusing in on that is really hardcore.
Yeah. And then, you know, the strict rules that come with it, like, you know, when everybody in the game is like, oh, yeah, so if you embrace the darkness, you're a bad guy. Not only are you a bad guy, but you literally become a monster. And then when you become a monster, your body, if you're strong enough, becomes neutral and doesn't really care about anything and just kind of does what it wants. But that's the alignment system in a nutshell, and it's something that's important to the role playing, because even though, you know, Kingdom Hearts is yeah, it's a JRPG, but it's really lax on the RP side of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's about as much of an RPG as Crash Bandicoot is, but it's really, really good.
It's a platformer without the platform.
Right. You're running around with a giant key, smacking the ever-living insert bleep sound here out of everything that you see that has the word darkness or heartless attached to it. And you're just having a merry old time because you're the good guys.
Or is a box or a crate or a vase.
Yeah,
or takeout like, food or...
Oh my God, ingredients. Gosh, there's an ingredient around here. Oh, come on. I just want to go.
But I have to find all of them.
But, you know, that's actually an interesting point, too. Because, like I said, the jokes actually will point you in the right direction. You know, they made cooking a big deal in Kingdom Hearts 3. What is not a big deal in Kingdom Hearts, you know, 1 through 2.8, and I'm not joking, that is a title of one of the games. You know, what's not a big deal in those games or D&D? Cooking. Like, when have you ever said, oh, well, what are you eating? As a DM, have you entirely cared? If you're the type of DM who's like, come up with a menu for your taverns, you're a god and you should be worshipped. But 99% of DMs have not only have no idea what their taverns are serving, do not care if your players, if your player characters have eaten in the last 12 hours.
Well, I mean, that also comes back to eating, going to the bathroom. When was the last time you washed yourself? When was the last time you washed your clothes? Like, how gross are we as people, guys?
Mm-hmm.
We are as pristine as our character art deems us.
Exactly.
There's a cantrip for that.
There is. It's called shocking grasp, right?
That's about right.
Is that one time?
it's what I like to call friendly wake-up touch.
Oh, shocking grasp. Wake up touch.
It's fun. It's just shocking grass, you know. It's no worse than, you know, the old buzzer trick. But you know, you can incorporate elements like that, and JRPGs love doing this. Is making food matter. Like Breath of the Wild, for instance, also made food matter.
Mm-hmm.
Running around collecting all these fun ingredients, and then apparently there's a gourmand working for Square Enix and Nintendo. Because they're like, oh, we had this amazing dish today, and now I feel like I could lift a mountain. Oh my God, why don't we put that in? It's like, you know what? There's no. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, kind of going off of that, I think the hardest part for me as a game master running a game where I want to include something like ingredients and food and things like that, it's finding that time of the foraging for the players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then finding those specific ingredients without being like, yeah, you found it. Good job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And making right. It matter, I think is the hard part from a GM side.
Yeah, I see that. I think that some things that will alleviate that is if you kind of like, you know, they do in Kingdom Hearts 3. Oh my God, it's almost like Square Enix is, no, I'm kidding. They didn't. But, you know, you do it, you can kind of do it like the game does, where they take you aside and say, hey, Timmy, look, this is how food works. Look at that. Doesn't it look good? It'll give you these benefits. And you can do that with your players. You know, one thing that, you know, I always recommend people doing early on is that when you're making something matter in D&D or any TTRPG, actually show them. Show them the benefits. It's not railroading necessarily. If by the end of it they go, oh, wow, we should do that more often.
That's true. That's true.
True.
What do you think about that, Joe?
I agree with that. I think where a lot of people may get hung up with that most of the time is I feel like playing a tabletop, you're less likely to grind for something like that. when you're in the video game, you're more willing to just spend that time sitting there grinding. Oh, I'm going to go all over and find this ingredient and find this ingredient and find this ingredient. You'll waste hours and not care. But when you're sitting around the table with everybody else, you're like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, just give me my food and let me do it and go and do something else. I want to do things and this and that. So finding that balance there with these things are accessible or more findable than I've got to go walk around in the woods for 5 hours looking for leaves of this plant or whatever the case may be. I think that's where people might get hung up on that and where a lot of that just gets lost most of the time in tabletop games.
I can see that. I think my one rebuttal for that would be is that the person who can decide what grinding is or what it becomes is also the dungeon master, is also the game master. So at the same time, you know, one of the most underused tools in games is downtime.
Yeah, that's exactly mm-hmm. what I was just thinking. Utilizing downtime,
but yep.
and actually taking time to put downtime into the game. And I think this makes a huge difference for players and the game itself to incorporate that. Mm-hmm. It's so big and it can make such a difference, especially with backstory for your characters, things like that. And also with things like cooking and food and ingredients and such. And like downtime doesn't necessarily have to be a week. It can be a few hours. It could be mm-hmm. time varies. Come on, guys.
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I think that's something that people often overlook, because I think the general stereotype of the D&D character is they are this insomniac who doesn't have to eat, who goes in the suit, who hasn't bathed in weeks like you were talking about. But those things are what's happening off screen. And especially for tables that love the like yes and acting kind of improv style games, you know, being able to just like, even if you took the time to come up with some kind of system where you say, here are your down point times. Like this is your down. I'll try that again. See, designer brain was full force. Linguistics brain was not there to be found. But so you could say, these are your number of downtime points. You have so many accrued. This is a table of things that you can buy with your downtime points that you can just almost retcon into play. Like, oh, you had 5 hours, that gives you 2 points. You could have done any of these things with these points, and sometimes it costs gold. So even if you don't want to take the time at the table to talk about downtime, or you're too busy to, you know, write to each other in Discord or Twitter or Messenger or what have you, you could very well, like, give yourself a system where it's basically a currency you could use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I like to think of the downtime in the game, though, as, I mean, you can almost do as much, if not more, character development in that downtime, depending on how you use it, as you can going through an adventure.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like people overlook it all the time with this downtime, but it's really, if you plan a little bit and think ahead, it can be an amazing tool for furthering your character and what you're doing and becoming way more invested in your game.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Oh, man. Guys, downtime is coming. It's coming. Get ready, Joe. Get ready.
Oh, I'm ready.
I think the irony there is, though, is like one thing we don't see at all in Kingdom Hearts is Sora's downtime.
No, like, we don't.
Have you played through the Corona level yet? The Tangled level?
I'm there now. Yes.
Okay. So one of the things is they're like, hey, the festival's tomorrow. You're not going to see Sora go to bed. That idiot's going to be running through the forest through the entirety of your time there. And they're like, oh, it's tomorrow. It's like, when? Where was I?
What happened? And this poor kid, man, he's running around these worlds, and then he's like, all right, I'm done. I got my key. I'm leaving on my little gummy ship with my tiny friends. And then I'm going to be like, I don't know where I'm going. And then I'm going to go find this new world and go land there and then continue on. Like, don't do drugs, yeah. Guys.
For those of you that don't know exactly what Sora's life looks like, this kid basically ran away from home when he was 14 years old. His legal custodians are now Goofy and Donald, and he's been trying to save the entirety of the universe for the last 17 years, and he has the whole Ash Ketchum syndrome of we've only seen him age 2 years in that span. You're welcome.
And really, he's only grown in shoe size.
Oh my god, if even. I hope that kid's still growing, but like, if he is, if he's like growing into his feet, Sora's gonna be like 20 feet tall.
Oh yeah, he is. Yeah. He's gonna give those Titans a real run for their money.
Oh my god. That was an amazing fight, though. You're just like on this train. Okay, so if we're talking about porting Kingdom Hearts into D&D, mm-hmm. we have to address some of the shenanigans that you kind of almost have to accept.
I want teacups.
Okay, the teacup attack is amazing. My wife and I were talking about this at dinner today, how much we love the teacup team attack. Lee, do you want to explain what the teacups are? Because some people are going to be out there and be like,
all right,
what?
Yeah, please do, because I have not played Kingdom Hearts, so I am also sitting here going, what? Teacups?
Poor Joe's face, this entire conversation. It's just me and Derek going, yeah. And Joe's like, no.
I'm
going
to be the voice of the others out there that are like, what?
Okay, so the teacup attack. As you might know, Kingdom Hearts is a JRPG role-playing game, right? And then Disney has been smothered on top of it.
Praise be Disney.
Right. So, you know, Disneyland, Disney World, there's those crazy teacups that you swirl around in and it's really fun. You pull that little disc and you spin your cup really fast. Yeah, mm-hmm. Think of that, but you're fighting monsters.
With it.
So out of nowhere, bedazzled cups just show up, and you jump inside of them and spin around as fast as you can to beat up creatures.
Let that sink in.
I want that.
And you know, okay. The weird thing is that they don't explain how Sora got these powers. He's never had them before.
No, they're just like, press triangle, man. I'm like, I'm doing it.
Did you notice that? They've never explained that before. And they're like, hey, man, get in this train. It'll be great.
So this I played
like
Kingdom Hearts 1.
Every phrase your parents ever tell you not to go with as a child. Hey, just get in my van. It'll be all right. Just well, press that button right there.
What could go
wrong?
Oh, yeah,
being with Donald and Goofy makes it so much better.
Hercules was there.
Hercules is a responsible adult, right?
Yeah. Mm.
No, he also threw us while we were on top of a statue at a little girl who was stuck on a wall.
That's super responsible.
Yeah.
But that is D&D logic, though. That is 100% D&D logic. You guys got this, I'll throw it, and you'll save them. Mm-hmm. We're not sure about the in-between parts, but it'll work, because I rolled
well.
It
doesn't matter. All right, we can go back to Lord of the Rings. Toss me.
It's precedent. The precedent is there.
It's been there, guys. But, okay, going back to what you were saying with the train, which is another one of these little button-mash randomnesses, the teacups, the water thing, like
Splash Run's my favorite.
Splash Run, yeah, it's craziness. But how can we pull in something like that to where if you reach X, I guess, attacks or build up of some unbeknownst thing to then summon this great power?
Well, so one thing I might recommend, and this is going to be a bad word, so get your sensor buttons ready, but you could look to 4th edition. because 4th edition divided its powers by encounter at will and daily.
Mm-hmm.
And if you said, okay, once per encounter, you can summon, you know, Splash Run or the pirate ship or this, you know, train that fires like fireworks out of its smokestack and destroys everything and is the best one. They only let you use it, you know, a certain amount of times the whole game, and it's disappointing. I digress. you could as a GM empower the players with, hey, we want this. And honestly, even in the game, you don't get to choose which one you're getting.
It's true. So I've passed a few times going, I don't want that one.
Yeah. No. Blaster Blaze is the worst, if you ask me. I don't want to shoot. I just want to be in the merry-go-round and hit everything. But
that one's really hard, though.
It was really hard, but it's kind of fun when you get it.
Yeah.
As a side note, I always picture that when you do the final attack and you spin around really fast, I'm always expecting Soaring Donald and Goofy to come out as this weird amalgamed chimera creature.
All right, so backstory on this. You're riding on this carousel, right? But it has this like light pulse coming out of it. So all of these powers look like they just came out of Vegas.
It's great. But
it is great. It has this light pulse coming out of it, and you have to hit your button at the same as the pulse to then turn your merry-go-round carousel thing faster and faster and faster to then build up your attack and cause more damage.
Okay.
Backstory on that.
Yeah. And then, you know, design, exactly. What do you follow up with? It's just, yeah. But like, if you wanted to design those, you know, if you wanted to do the carousel, it stays in one spot. You could roll checks. You could roll performance checks. You could roll acrobatics check. You could just roll a D20 or something of the sort. Whoever is controlling this effect could be dealing this output of damage, and then when it's done, it does one last burst of something like all of them do. You basically can take the frame of the game and insert things in a way that they're not broken. So, little spoiler for you guys, as a, like, kind of, you know, gift to you guys and to your listeners, by the time that they hear this, I'll have created a few Keyblades as magic items. I'll have created a Sora, Donald, Goofy, and Riku NPC stat blocks.
Nice.
And I'll even have created one of the attraction ride attacks to be used.
Mm.
And so, like, what you can do is that you can find all these other niches for where these powers come into play that aren't explored. Because one thing that I do, as, you know, from Mage College, see previous episode, is looking for a design space. You know, one of the funny things is that they actually slipped in encounter-based powers into 5e, but nobody noticed. They say, you know, for instance, if you are a Battlemaster fighter, you get an inspiration die back when you roll for initiative, if you don't have one. Or not an inspiration die, a combat superiority die.
Right, right.
And so by sneaking that in there, by finding these little clauses where you can insert these things, that actually creates the venue of where you can insert these goofy powers without it necessarily ruining your game. But in the same vein of quote-unquote ruining your game, to make it Kingdom Hearts, you kind of have to let a few things go, like gravity and falling damage. And what the best part is that, like, you know, at one point, and I'm not going to say where or how, but one character of the world actually comments about how gravity doesn't work normally for Sora.
It's true.
Like, it just doesn't.
Like, in the first, so I'm not going to count this as a spoiler, but in Kingdom Hearts, what do they call it? 2.9. When you're in Olympus, like, there's this one point where you're like jumping and jumping and jumping, and you're on top of this like weird floating island sky thing, and it wants you to jump down to open up this box, and I kept missing, and like, this has to be like miles above the ground, and like, you were falling and you hit like supersonic speed because everything starts going like whoosh, and he's like, oh, I missed it, and he's on his feet. I'm like,
Yeah, he does a parkour roll and he walks away fine.
Right. I was panicking. I was like, oh no, I'm gonna die. Nah, it's fine. So I did it like 80 more times until I actually got it right. But no,
the funny thing is that the weird inverse is that when an enemy throws Sora at the ground, then he gets hurt.
Yeah. Willing, not willing, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Gravity's his friend, I guess. But the point is, you're going to have to make a certain number of, concessions in order to apply some of this like JRPG feel to it. Like, if you look at Final Fantasy, gravity is a bygone idea to those people.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever watched Final Fantasy VII Advent Children and seen that, other than the first 3 minutes that Cloud and Sephiroth are exchanging words, their feet don't touch the ground. They're only being propelled by sword strikes through the entirety of that scene. And granted, it's really cool to watch.
It is really cool to watch.
Spoiler alert, not how sword fights work.
That's how my sword fights work. I don't know what's wrong with your swords.
As a fencer, I probably should be trying harder then.
Oh, man. All right. So one of my favorite aspects of the game are collecting all the keyblades and how every keyblade is different and has different like powers and hits and buffs and things like that. And I realize from like a magical item standpoint, that's not too difficult to really like put in different stat blocks for different weapons. But I feel like there's so much more than just a long sword that will allow for me to turn it into a shield for X rounds and throw at people.
Mm. Yeah. And so one thing that the game does, Kingdom Hearts does with it, is that you also have to hit somebody a number of times with it and then activate the transformation.
Yeah.
Which is like another layer of like weirdness to it.
It is.
So the way it's going to work, and now seeing as I'm saying it into the universe and not in my head, I have to do it this way. or at least at this moment in time, the plan is, so the way that I'm designing the keyblades to work, I'm doing the kingdom key, which is more of like a power-up transformation. The way that we might consider it as D&D nerds, it's a lot like blade singing from the blade singing arcane tradition, where it's more of like going briefly Super Saiyan. My God, there's so many Japanese references in here. Your listeners who don't know Kingdom Hearts are going to be like, what is going on in this game?
Okay, they don't know Kingdom Hearts. They don't know Final Fantasy. They don't know Dragon Ball Z. Dragon Ball in general, I guess. But like, oh gosh. Sorry, guys. Sorry, not sorry. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got this linguist on there, and they just talk gibberish the whole time.
Don't listen to these.
If you don't know
episodes.
Some of these words, go check them out. I highly
not
recommend
with Urban Dictionary,
it.
Though.
Yeah.
But
I'm gonna look up going Saiyan in the Urban Dictionary.
Oh no! Oh God! Not touching that one. Not with a 10-foot long keyblade. So the way that I am designing now is that whenever you hit somebody, you generate what I'm calling a form point, because these are referred to as form changes. And once you hit a certain number, then you can expend them, these points, to activate the transformation. And then that transformation lasts so many rounds, and then it has like a finishing move that is also expended by generating more form points, because technically, with the way that a magic item weapon would work, if you don't turn it off, it stays on. Like, that's the logic of it. So as long as you're still building up form points, you can then do this things if X conditions met. So I'm also including the High Wind, which is a keyblade you get later on in the Pirates of the Caribbean world. It's a great keyblade. Lee, I can't wait for you to see this keyblade. It's amazing. It's like the best one.
I'm so excited.
It turns into a lance and then it turns into a bow, and it's so fast and it just hits so hard. It's great.
Also, I love that it's called the High Wind for multiple reasons. First, do you know the backstory about the High Wind?
Are we talking to me or Joe? Because I feel Joe needs this more.
Oh, Joe knows.
Oh, I'm all in on this part. Yeah,
oh, okay. So this is a me thing.
This is you, Derek.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Do you know about the High Wind?
No, I don't.
So the High Wind is the name of pretty much every airship in any sort of Square Enix game ever.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, that respect. Yeah. Okay, I didn't know if it was like an inside joke where it's like, once we had this pirate ship that we called the High Wind.
No, that part comes in a second too. Here, so, yeah.
So then we had an airship in one of our games, and it was also named the High Wind.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love it. Yeah, so good. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, and the High Wind is also what they were going to name the raft in the first Kingdom Hearts, and then it's also the name of the gummy ship, and yeah.
I love it.
The, yeah.
It's just all the warm fuzzies right there.
It's really great.
Yeah, it is.
And then I'm also doing... Oh no, can I unlock the Ultima Keyblade in that amount of time? No, I shouldn't do that. I'll do the one that turns into the double arrow guns, i.e. those are called crossbows, Nomura. You can take these things, and when you give them a duration and you give them something that feels magical and feels powerful in this kind of like endless loop, because that's what Kingdom Hearts plays like. You're doing a lot of the same moves all the time, and somehow by whatever witchcraft, it doesn't get boring.
I, for real, you were literally just pressing the same button over and over and over and over and over again.
And it's then an you amazing
press triangle
time.
Just to press it again.
He's not wrong. Like, we're not lying to you.
But it's great. And like you have to keep that greatness of it. Like, how does that even happen? I don't even know, man.
Like, well, that's one thing actually. It just as you said that stood out to me is that Kingdom Hearts is so visual.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to really bring that to life, other than like taking the D&D approach of running around and hitting everything, you murder hobos, is make it as flashy as you can. Like, collaborate as a group to be like, oh, well, I jump 30 feet in the air and I drop down on this dude. Just do it. Like, it's just flavor. It doesn't hurt anyone.
Yeah, it is. It is just flavor. That is all it is.
But your character can only jump 13 feet.
Oh, no. He said the number 13.
That's all you can jump, though. You can't jump 30 feet. Come on now.
See, because my mind's now going to like Xehanort and the organization. I'm like,
mine too. Mine too. It jumped right there. I was like, and then Axel's there and he's like crying and like eating ice cream. And
also, good on them for making a guy the most pretty character in a Square Enix game. Mm. Like, Axel's gorgeous in that game. Really, I don't know how they did it.
Axel's been my favorite since forever. And
oh, he's great.
Like, he showed up and they're calling him Lee, and I'm like, oh man. Oh, yeah. He's got
that's
the hair.
Me. And, yeah. Mm. Well, now you have to go around introducing yourself, being like, yeah, the name's Lee. Got it memorized. Yeah, I can do Quentin Flynn's voice. I'm sorry.
That's good. That was good.
My question is for you, Lee. What do you think is necessary about like the villains or the characters in a Kingdom Hearts game? Like, how do you capture that?
Well, I think that depends which aspect of villain. Are we talking like the Disney villains that show up, like Maleficent? Are we talking about like the organization, or are we talking about like the other organization, like the in real the, organization or the first one? Or
in the words of my favorite, my personal heroes, Tulio and Miguel, both is good.
So I think the best... no, not going to use those words. I need different words. The Kingdom Hearts captures villains that not only do they have their own agenda, but they're advancing the heroes in a direction to benefit them while keeping them on track for the story, but also being fun and goofy and almost friendly and helpful all at the same time, but they're also like, ha, we're gonna kill you.
You really just point out kind of like one of the most fun things that, like, yeah, when you say it out loud, it's like, yeah, that is goofy, but I also realize how much I love it.
I do too. I love that villain that is, these terrible things are happening. I am right here in front of you. You don't like me. I don't like you, but you should go and do this thing because it's really going to mess everyone up while I go do this other thing that's only going to probably mess you up.
Right. Like, as a fan, that moment when Ansem and Xemna show up in Twilight Town and just start talking smack, I was like, no, just bring it, guys. Ivan, come on, yeah. Just hit me harder. But, you know, you're absolutely right.
But it was good. And the way that they did that and the way that they introduced it, and, like, they're right there in your face and they're like, what are you going to do with these two hearts in you? Like, he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on you, man. That's on you. Oh, we got to go. Yeah. Bye.
That's an important point. Make sure, if you're going to use villains like the organization, make sure they can run away.
Yeah.
Because the axiom of D&D players is, if it has hit points, I can kill it. And if it can't run away, I'm going to kill it.
Yeah.
Especially these guys right here. I'm pointing at Joe.
Yeah.
Like, I like to be, I'm going to be the big bad, like, game master, and I'm going to throw something hard at them to teach them, like, it's fine to run away from fights. And then I'm like, well, wow, okay, this group of level twos just killed Baba Yaga and took her hut. That's fine.
That happened. Yeah, that did happen.
No big deal.
I have this beautiful, like, mental picture of, like, you're like, You're maniacally laughing, and then it's a smash cut to you, like, mopping up pieces of Beholder.
Straight up, that is exactly how it happened.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I guess we have our hut now. I'm like, oh, I guess you do.
And that was only three of the four of us also.
Yeah, that wasn't even everyone.
I'm sorry I laughed that hard, because no. I know that feeling as a dungeon master, where it's like, you know, you say, yeah, I guess you do. And inside you're like, I have no idea what happens next. How do I turn this around? This can only get worse.
Mm-hmm. I pretty much gave them a townhouse that is stuck inside of a gym that they can summon whenever they want and decorate however they please. You know what? Good for you guys. Go for it. That's fine.
Yeah.
D&D is a wonderful game.
It's fine. It's fine. But you can only jump so many feet.
Yes.
Unless you're playing Kingdom Hearts D&D, then jump to your heart's content. Athletic checks are just formalities.
And the more you attack, the higher you can go.
Yeah, so about that.
As long as you keep connecting, you don't have to land on the ground.
Yeah.
I think that's a very important part, too, is creating that chain of attacks. But, all right, so we're an initiative, right? We've got five players at the table. We've got three baddies in the middle. We have to keep that continuous loop going between initiative and then embracing that chain all at the same time without it getting too much to keep up with. That can get intense real quick.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I don't know if that's, like, everybody struggles with, like, initiative. Do you guys ever have, like, that kind of problem where it's like, oh god, I wish initiative was different?
I feel like we do relatively okay at our table.
Yeah, I think we all tend to be pretty on board with how the standard initiative is, so.
But then every now and then I will give them literal 5-second rounds.
Yeah.
Where I will count out loud to them, five, four, three, two, one. And if you are not done, you get skipped. And we move on to the next person.
Gotcha.
So they're good about it.
I think it might come down to, like, yeah, you know, there's the general initiative, like, policies where it's like, know your spells, know what you're casting, know what
you're
doing.
Sure.
And I think there comes with, like, a level of familiarity with the character where you know what you're doing because it's either what the character would do or you've been thinking about it for a while.
Yeah.
It might come down to even flavoring it with, okay, so I jump into a thrust, turning it into a backspin, hitting them upside the head, jump into a full frontal flip, and land smashing my keyblade onto their shoulder. Like, just be narrative with it.
Yeah.
You know, you can really embellish, and I think that's, like kind of like what you hinted at earlier, is that we are just pressing the same buttons.
We are. That's all we're doing.
And it's like, that's not so different than what we're doing in D&D. Like, if you're playing a fighter, like, you're obviously taking the attack action. You're hit. Just pressing
hit.
Yeah.
Hit.
The same button.
Hit. Oh, and another hit. I'm going to hit again. Let me hit.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that comes... Go ahead,
no. No. I think you're definitely onto it about making it more narrative. And I've seen this come up a few times on... like the internets and people talking about, like, they miss that they don't like combat, but they like role play. But, like, combat is role play. It is the most involved role play that we will have at this table. Sure, discussions are great, but, like, we are creating actions based off of a randomized ball of plastic, metal, resin, whatever it may be that we're rolling, and we're creating actions based off of that. Like,
yeah,
let's flavor it, yo.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who had a pretty stark criticism for, like, we didn't roll once the entire session and we loved it. But also at the same time, and I'm not saying that you're people who do that are doing it wrong, but that necessarily isn't interfacing with the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't pick up the game to play it, like, your characters are cool, but the game is an aspect in it that you can engage with. And if you find ways to engage with it while doing that, then you're winning even harder.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you said.
It's true, but... I think combat is its own aspect, but it is also a narrative.
Oh yeah. That might be why many combats, like, the difference between a combat that's way too long and a combat that's, like, enjoyable, is one of them is going to embellish in what it looks like and what it feels like and who's doing what and why they're doing it.
Yeah. But I also understand the, like, if we get too narrative with it, then everybody's stagnant at the table and we want to keep things moving and going and flow. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Fine balance. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Finding that fine line between this is cool and this is taking way too long.
Yeah.
He's on his eighth soliloquy now.
Like, we get it. You hit him seven times. We don't need to know every little flip and turn and move and everything like that in every one of these hits that you somehow managed to get every turn.
Yeah.
And this time I do it with a tinge of sadness in my eye.
And a tear rolls down my cheek and nestles into my beard fluff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So due to, you know, our conundrum before we started actually recording this session, I have no idea how long we have gone, but... this has been Kingdom Hearts at your table.
Friends, Heartless Darkness.
That was cool, though. And I think I'm really excited about these keyblades and, you know, all these big embellishments and having these new NPC blocks that you are now going to create because you told us you would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it too. Yeah. And I've also conscripted my wife to help me.
Nice. Oh, I'm excited. Is she going to draw some Keyblades?
I don't know that she'll draw Keyblades because I'm probably just going to go to Square Enix and be like, hey, what art can I use as long as I point them in the... Yeah. But she's probably going to help me do the whole thing where I'm like, okay, how would you interpret Faraga? Is it a fireball? Is it not a fireball? Is it flame strike? Work with me here.
Right. Yeah. All right. That's fair. That's fair. Okay. So, Derek, that was amazing. Like always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Yes. Absolutely.
Where can people find you and your stuff and all that it is that you do?
You can find me on themagecollege.com, where I write stuff like Keyblades and stat blocks, because why not? Or over on Twitter at @Archmage_Derek. And sometimes bi-weekly, you can find me on Goldheart Gaming running the new Legacy of Eldraine stream, which is set in my own homebrew setting.
Nice.
That's exciting.
Can't wait.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
If you would like to interact with us, you can find us on Twitter at @Mage_podcast, or check out our website, mageproductions.com. On the website, we have free resources to help you with your game, as well as cool things that you can purchase to help support our show, including original Mage adventures set in our homebrew world.
Or if you just want to tell other people how much you love the show and that they should listen, you can leave us a 5-star review, go and review us wherever you get your podcast from. We really love to see those and read what you think.
And we would like to give a huge shout out to our partners and sponsors for all of the awesome people that help us bring you this show. First off, Hit Dice. Check them out at hitdicepod.com and on Twitter at hitdicepod. Hit Dice is a meticulously edited real play, a 5th edition D&D podcast that has amazing audio, a super fun cast. So if you haven't listened yet, you should.
Also, Kraken Dice, some of the best dice around. If you're looking for some awesome new dice, you don't have to look any further. Just go check them out, krakendice.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at @krakendice so that you can keep track of when they are going to release new dice, because some of them sell out stupidly quick, and if you don't get them, you just don't get them. So go check them out there. And then when you find your dice that you have to have, use the code MAGE. And get yourself 10% off, because who doesn't like 10% off? Just keep in mind, you can not use that with any other discounts. So, you know, pick whichever one makes more sense for you.
And of course, last but not least, SoNerdWear.com, a place to find fun clothing and accessories tailored for tabletop geeks and nerds everywhere. They're also on Twitter at SoNerdWear. They've really stepped up the entire game for us. They now host all of our swag, so you can get t-shirts, stickers, mugs, cups. They have like phone cases,
mouse pads
and speakers and sweatshirts. Yeah, it's really absolutely fantastic. So you can go to SoNerdWear.com and search for Mage Productions to find all of our cool swag. And then once you find everything and put it all in your cart, you can use code MAGE to get 10% off your entire order.
Check them out.
Anything else?
I don't know. I think we actually got it all that time.
It helps when you write things down.
It does.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah.